Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Writer, producer, and all-around good guy George Gal is going to join us. Also, the news is coming your way as well. First, there is Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, sure, you do one or the other. And then there's your automotive policy. How about you get your bundle going at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save and just how easy Geico can make it when you visit geico.com. That is geico.com.
And now, a tip from the 1965 issue of Good Housekeeping. 120 ways to please a man.
A nagging wife is a millstone around the neck of any man. She's a nuisance at home, and she consumes time on the phone every day, nagging her husband while he's at work. The complaining woman can toss a cloud over the brightest of days and the brightest of men.
Just one of 120 ways to please a man. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Oh, the simpler times.
I'll drink to that.
George Gallo has joined us. George is a director, writer, producer, painter, musician. We've talked to him before about all these big movies he's done. Latest is Vanquish, and it's available now on digital and on demand. Stars Morgan Freeman and
Ruby Rose.
And our own Nate Adams, who works at the other shop, worked on it, did some producing on it.
Also, he was there for eye candy.
ran the second unit, right?
Yeah, he was very responsible for doing a lot of the chase stuff, and he did a hell of a job.
And acted a little bit in it?
Played a cop who got beat up?
Yeah.
He's a dead cop at the beginning of the movie. He's sitting in a chair bleeding to death.
Perfect.
He did an amazing job. Didn't flinch, didn't blink. You totally believe that he's dead.
Yeah. No,
he's a good corpse.
Nobody does non-movement like Nate. Where'd you guys shoot the film? I remember when Nate took off to go shoot it, but I can't remember. One of the Carolinas?
Yeah, we shot in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Oh, Mississippi.
Yeah, they have like a 35% tax credit, and Morgan Freeman also lives in Mississippi. Yeah. So it was great for Morgan. He rolls out of bed. He goes to the set. So,
And you go back with him, as we discussed before, right?
Yeah, he's an old buddy. Yeah, he's an old friend, dear friend. And what's great about Morgan is he's Morgan Freeman, and we're buddies. So I could pick up the phone and call him up and say, hey, I'm doing this movie. Do you want to do it? And he generally says, when do we start? And so I cut through a lot of the red tape of managers and agents and lawyers and
relationships. We're coming up on the Oscars. When is it?
Two, three days.
Oh,
wow. At the end of the week. It's Sunday.
Yeah,
that's, I will not be going.
How the Oscar thing leaves such a small footprint in my brain now. Like, I wrote for it two times, and I don't even know when it's around. But I think they did 7 nominated for Best Film. As I was looking it up, I counted. I think
I
it was 7.
Yeah,
it was 7. They're all really small films. Have you seen any of them, George?
I saw a few of them. I've been busy, so I saw Nomadland that I liked a great deal. My wife and I saw that.
Which one?
Nomadland?
Nomadland. Yeah. I thought that was a beautiful film.
Eight films.
Yeah. Beautiful movie. Very poetic. I don't. What else is up? I mean, I'm not in the business. So tell me what else is.
Sound of Metal.
I haven't seen it. I want to see it. I haven't seen it.
That's excellent.
The Father.
Is it great? Good. Okay.
The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, The Trial of the Chicago 7, Nomadland. Yeah.
Minari.
Yeah, I got a disc on that movie, on Trial of Chicago 7, and it only played 10 minutes. It kept stopping, so I didn't know if that was...
It's on Netflix.
You didn't miss much.
Okay. It's aight.
Okay. I didn't know if it was my machine was trying to tell me something or it was something malfunctioning with the disc.
Well, at least you have a disc player. How many discs did we all get this year? I don't have any way to play them. I don't have a DVD player anymore.
These are called first world problems.
Right.
Yes, I still have DVDs, and I just literally bought a new TV, and I had it. You know, you can't just buy a new television. the TV costs $300, but then you have to get a new this and a new that. Before you know, you drop like $4,000, you know. What was wrong with the old receiver? It played. It was fine.
Yeah. You have to sign up for Hulu now and all sorts of stuff, like when you get your TV. But here's an interesting thought experiment. If you take all the films that are nominated for Best Film, all eight, mm-hmm. and you did their average budget, I bet it would be 10 times lower than 20 years ago.
Mm. Yeah.
I would say that's very true.
For those movies, I bet it averages less than $10 million. With Mank probably being the most expensive.
Oh yeah, like Promising Young Woman, I think. Yeah. Is that what I saw? Yeah,
Promising Young Woman.
I saw The Father, which is really good, and that's gotta cost $5 million, with $4 million going to Anthony Hopkins.
Right. Promising Young Woman looked like it was a cheap film. It looked inexpensive. Right. It didn't seem to be. If they spent more than $2 million on that film, they shouldn't have, because it didn't need it. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like. I don't know. I didn't see the films. I can't say. Sorry.
No, it's all right. We're going to keep going down this road. Yeah,
I'm a big help. Yeah. What else haven't I seen?
that's its own answer. That hasn't.
I saw Jaws.
Enough.
I saw Jaws. It's great.
Have you ever tried a persimmon? If the answer is no, let's talk about it for a while.
Sure, I'd rather talk about the booze. It looks good.
Yeah, we got our 818 rye here, and it is delectable.
In-house, homemade.
In-house, homemade, yes.
Yeah, I feel bad. It's like, you know, I'm talking to three drunks, and I'm sober.
How dare you?
It's not fun, you know?
Yeah.
On the other end of the scale, and this is a pathetic humble brag, I admit this, but I make it my mission to try and see every Oscar movie every year. I'm a huge movie fan, and I'm only short two foreign language films. I saw Pieces of a Woman today. Very depressing, but very good.
Did you see Minari?
I did see Minari. Minari's really good.
Are you, how about the Cinerama Dome being closed? Oh, did George freeze up on us? And Arclight. I was going to ask George if he had thoughts about that. But
I can give you
internet froze
while we filibust. I can give you a few theories on what's going on with that.
Please.
So there's big news here that Arclight is, you know, shuttering, and that includes our very famous Cinerama Dome, which looks like the top of Epcot, and it's a big, you know,
golf
it's just,
ball.
Yeah, it's a big fun movie theater for big premieres.
Probably
and stuff.
In the '60s, early.
I would think
60s
so. That's what it looks like.
It's got that. Yeah.
And there's a lot of partial viewing. I mean, if we've all seen movies there. Sit in the wrong row, but it's still really fun. And one of the theories floating around is that Paramount or Disney or someone like that is going to buy it and show only
their
Disney
films.
You know, yeah, the Avengers, the, you know, all
like
that
the
stuff.
El Portal. Oh, sorry, yeah, the El Portal. No, the El
no.
El Rey.
El Capitan.
God
yes.
damn it.
Yes,
El Cabong, right?
El Cabong. So one of the theories is one.
But
of
it would
the
be like that, right?
Yeah, it'd be only Paramount movies or
right.
whatever.
Pixar, yeah.
Interesting.
Right.
All
but
right.
we'll see.
I think you and I and Mike Lynch saw Iron Man at the Cinerama Dome in 2008. I have a
yes.
vague recollection of that.
If you think it, I believe it.
Okay.
Yeah, the Hammer premiere was there, and Jimmy and I saw Sex and the City 2 there and got busted by TMZ. And
super high.
I snuck into that place and saw the documentary on Any Sunday, which was a motorcycle riding dune buggy racing documentary that had Steve McQueen in it back in the 70s when they had these really weird, there was a genre of documentary where they had a narrator and lots of footage of guys riding wheelies on dirt bikes and stuff. And also when a documentary like On Any Sunday was a pretty low budget, sort of dumb, you know, kind of dirt bike, race car, mostly motorcycle documentary, like low budget motorcycle
right.
documentary, could just be in every major theater in every major city.
This was at the Cinerama Dome?
The Cinerama Dome.
Wow.
I think it was On Any Sunday 2, which
no,
shows you
sequels.
How successful
wow.
on, any,
Sunday?
On Any Sunday was. It had like Steve McQueen, and they were following Steve McQueen going out dirt bike riding, and it was a groundbreaking doc from the early 70s. I don't know. You can. It was very 70s in its theme.
Can't look anything up.
Max Zapata. Internet's down. We'll find a clip from On Any Sunday at some point, and it just drips of the 70s.
Speaking of the internet being down, I've been to the Cinerama Dome many times, as you guys have, and I'll never forget seeing 87% of Inception there when, you know, that's a movie you got to really be paying attention. Mm-hmm. And about halfway, a little more than halfway through the movie, I'm just starting to feel uncomfortable. Like, I don't know what it is, but I'm kind of getting that anxiety that I'm so used to.
Carbon monoxide.
Well, and it's, you know, it's the summer and I'm kind of trying to shake it off and I'm watching the movie and I notice other people are kind of shifting in their seats and I'm like, I feel like I'm going to throw up or pass out. Something's wrong here. And then the movie, like, it looked like you see in the movies, like it burns basically. The air condition had gone out in the middle of this heat wave we were having.
2.5 hour movie.
And I never saw the end. So they're asking everyone to leave and they said, come back. And I'm like, come back and sit through the first three and a half hours again. Wow. But everyone was just getting uncomfortable and nobody could really. Your brain doesn't figure out why right away that we're all really hot.
I think I saw the Andre the Giant doc.
Great doc.
There. Oh, yeah.
The yeah, HBO I saw doc. That. Yeah. That's probably the last thing I saw at the Cinerama Dome. Well, anyway, you can't really turn them into flooring stores or boot barns or anything like that. You have to be movie theater. So hopefully somebody will come in and resurrect that place. I was looking for movies because I thought, over the weekend, I thought, I want to go to a movie theater. Like, it's such a novel thought. Sure. A lot of them were still closed. Or
Completely closed?
Yeah, some were closed. Others are just showing movies that you probably don't want to see and you could watch on TV. I think it's going to take a little while for the Fast Nines to get
there. There is a glut of movies coming out this summer on the Film Vault. We're doing our summer preview and it is a cornucopia of films, that a lot of them from last year that were supposed to come out. The Ryan Reynolds movie Free Guys coming out after it was supposed to come out last spring or something, the Fast Nine.
Whatever happened to the Quiet Place sequel
that's
that never
coming
came
out this summer?
Okay.
That didn't come out already?
It was supposed to come out like in March or April, like right at the beginning of
last
COVID.
Year.
Yeah.
Right. I
saw trailers for that all over last year.
All right. So hopefully we'll get back to everything. George is, I don't know where it's our internet's all mucked up.
Well, now we're all here and we can keep doing the show.
Yeah, I agree. Ugh. People always say they can fix it, but I don't know. Can they? Can we, Max Spana?
Yeah, well, we're getting fiber installed here.
Oh,
wow. But there's only one game in town for the entire area, so we're getting fiber installed. But it's actually a process that takes a few weeks, months even. So we're just getting that. So you actually signed the contract today, Adam.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. And it ain't free.
We got
fiber.
George back here.
Oh, George is back. George will remember on any Sunday. Yeah, not any given Sunday.
Right. Oh, here he is.
Hey, George, you remember that 70s doc on any Sunday?
Yes, of course.
It was huge back then,
right? It was gigantic, yeah. What happened? Your internet went down?
Yeah, our internet went down. Sorry.
You guys drinking? Is everybody drinking?
You can drink when
the
internet's down.
The internet's drunk.
Yeah, internet. Actually, alcohol consumption goes up when the internet goes down, statistically.
Yeah.
I was going to tell Chris to find a clip of on any Sunday just so you could see what the 70s looked like or sounded like or something like. It's a weird time.
Yeah, I was a kid then. You know, I graduated high school in 1974. And I mean, I guess everybody looks back at that time in their life whenever it was that it was the greatest. But man, it was a really good time. I mean, it was you know, it seemed like creatively it was great. Movies were far better. You know, there were still great things being written, great music, you know. Anyway,
well, when he refers to movies, of course, he's referring to Aloha, Bobby and Rose.
Yeah, obviously.
Even the bad movies back then were better than a lot of the A movies today.
That's fair.
You know?
Well, I think anytime you get big corporations involved with art, the art's going to suffer generally. And I would say if they were involved with painting would suffer. And if they were involved with stand-up would suffer. Like, you can't have huge conglomerations, international conglomerations involved with art without the art suffering. Is that a safe statement?
That's absolutely 100% correct. And then, you know, the other thing about, you know, art and look, I mean, corporations, it's their, their job to, you know, to take meetings and then to take meetings on the meetings. And then you take a meeting on the meeting that you just had a meeting about. And then everybody has, you know, and it just goes on and on and on. And yeah, I mean, look, in the end, anything artistic, you know, be it anything, it's generally some person, some individual with some crazy idea, and they decide to go for it. And, you know, by its very nature, it's supposed to challenge you. You know, that's the whole point of doing it, right? It's supposed to challenge you, shake you up, make you think, make you laugh, you know, attack institutions. I mean, that's sort of the whole point of being an artist, isn't it? I mean, you know, now if it's, once art becomes corporate, it can't do that anymore. So it ceases being art. It becomes something else.
It becomes commerce.
Becomes commerce.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, obviously, it doesn't interest me terribly. I mean, I'm not that I don't like making money. I mean, I like to make money, but I mean, at the same time, you know, it's not, you know, you become a writer or a director because you want to tell stories and you want to go to challenging places, you know, hopefully. So
we have the trailer for On Any Sunday.
Yes, it's
nominated.
I'd love to see it.
Nominated for Best Documentary in 1971.
Wow,
it's a real deal. Wow, okay.
Yeah, it's a big theatrical movie. Chris will figure out how to play it in a second.
Those of you who saw Bruce Brown's film, The Endless Summer, will know why his new film, On Any Sunday, has received rave reviews from 105 major publications. Here's one from Reader's Digest. Bruce Brown has created a film about motorcycles and the men who ride them that packs so much variety and visual excitement into every frame that it leaves you breathless. When it comes your way, don't forget to go along for the ride.
No Steve McQueen yet.
Trailers have come a long way.
They certainly have.
Yeah.
They just play some jazzy music and show a guy on flat track bikes, and that was it. Malcolm Smith. This movie had Steve McQueen all over it. It was the biggest star of the time, and you haven't seen him yet.
He also produced it.
Oh, he also produced it.
I don't know why they would keep that a secret.
They certainly are doing a fine job.
Yeah.
They're just showing guy riding desert bikes. Such a 70s thing. This idea of putting a camera on a motorcycle back then was a huge feat.
Oh, yeah. This is very obviously pre-GoPro. What are you doing?
I have to tell you something. You're convincing me that the 70s weren't so great.
No. This shit doesn't hold up at all.
Right?
Documentaries have come a long way.
Does Steve McQueen ever show up in this trailer?
And this Batman music is great, yeah. Too.
Very Mission Impossible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kid riding a wheelie on a mini bike.
But no Steve McQueen.
Still no Steve McQueen.
One of the biggest stars in Hollywood.
You ever work with Steve McQueen, George, or did he die before you got in the biz?
I think he passed before I got into the biz. How old do you think I am?
Steve McQueen.
We saw Helmet.
A tenth of a second. All right. Oof. There's still no Steve McQueen.
Shocking.
He's starring this low budget doc, and he's not in the trailer. Yeah, I didn't mean to age you prematurely.
No, that's okay. You can age me.
But I know you've been in the business for quite some time.
Yeah, Well, I said, started my first screenplay. I sold, I was very lucky. I sold the first script I ever wrote. It never got made. But then 1986, I wrote Wise Guys. Then 88, I wrote Midnight Run. You know, obviously that changed my life. Then I wrote Bad Boys right after that, but it didn't get made for several years.
How many years? That seems like a big span between Midnight Run and when Bad Boys
Bad Boys, I believe, came out in 95, the first movie. It sat around forever. I mean, because originally I sold it to Paramount, and then it went to Turnaround. It went to Disney, Then I went to Turnaround again to Sony. So, like, you know, at that point, I'd already done two or three other films, and some, you know, the phone rang and they said, hey, they're making Bad Boys. And I was like, great. You know, but
what was the motivation for Midnight Run? I love that movie. People should go back and watch that movie. It was primarily a comedy, really. It's sort of, it was an action film, but it had tons of comedy in it.
Well, and the way they played off each other.
Yeah, it was kind of like Silver Streak or some movie like that.
Well, that was very funny. That's, yeah, obviously I watched those movies, you know. Silver Streak, I think, came out in 76.
Richard Pryor
so.
And Gene Wilder.
Yeah, I love that movie. Yeah. It's on all the time. Every time it's on, I say I watch 10 minutes and I start watching, like, you know, big sections of it. I mean, Midnight Run happened. Did Nate ever tell you that? Because Nate asked me this question.
No.
I am terribly, terribly, terribly aviophobic. And I will do anything to not get on an airplane. I've driven cross country many, many times. My wife and I have taken the Amtrak many, many times cross country. She's not afraid of flying. She jumps out of airplanes. We really are opposites attract, you know. And but I was so I knew quite a bit about various stops, you know, in all through the middle America, because I'd driven it so many times. And there's two reasons. One thing is that my wife and I drove cross country so many times that, as anyone will tell you, you go on a 5-day road trip, you will be reduced to a child by day three, and you start yelling at each other. Those are my Cheetos. You know, you start. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of that bickering, I think, came out in the screenplay. And then the other thing was, I literally, this is no bullshit, I absolutely, can I say that word?
Yes.
Sorry. I literally stopped the plane from taking off once. A friend of mine convinced me to fly, because you got to stop being such a baby. You got to stop being, you know, I went, all right. So I got on a plane to go visit my parents in Florida, and they closed the door. And I got up and I said, I got to get off. Now, today they would tackle me, I'm sure.
Right.
You know, but this was like in the early, mid-80s. I got to get off. They said, sir, please sit down. If you don't understand, I'm opening up that effing door and I'm getting off the plane. And they just let me off. And that was that. And so I, much like Charles Grodin, stops that airplane from taking off. That's sort of the basis in my head. And so
that's why Grodin's character can't fly. Well, he can fly. We just kind of find out that he says he can't fly.
Right, but they say write what you know. So I knew bickering. I knew being afraid of flying. I knew cross-country trips. And I love cop movies. I love FBI stuff. I love mafia stuff, gangster stuff. So I just incorporated everything I ever liked in the movies, plus some personal stuff, and wrote a screenplay.
That's great. Really a funny movie. And again, I don't know if you think of it as a comedy or a buddy action film, but I think of it as a comedy.
It's definitely a comedy, because the premise is, you know, it's it was designed to be funny. I mean, you have one guy that's like a pressure cooker about to blow up all the time, and the other guy is just totally noodling him. So, yeah, I find that stuff very funny. So, I mean, it's sad you can never get that movie made today. Well, you know,
why?
Yeah, you could never get a movie made today, like a cross-country action movie. I mean, think about the movies that they're making. They're the big Marvel movies, or they're small independent movies. But the idea of a studio spending that, unless you're Spielberg and you're making an Indiana Jones film, but that's already a franchise. You know, the movie business has changed tremendously. You know, I flourished early on because they were always hunting for original content. Give us an original idea. And I had a head full of ideas. Let's do a movie about this. Let's do a movie about, you know, two cops, one married, one single, you know, which became Bad Boys. Let's do a movie about this, that, and the other thing. But today it has to be IP. It has to have been a book or a comic book, right, or a graphic novel based on a thing that was based on another thing that was once something else. That they, you know, and you talk about going back to the original discussion, it's all corporate thinking. You know, if it was good 50, 60 years ago, it has to be good today. We're not going to gamble money on an original idea. If you want to do that, then, you know, then go put up your house, which I've done a few times, and go make your independent movie. So
You want to hang with us for the news, George?
I would love to hear the news. You know, I have to jump at 12. I have a family thing that came up that I cannot get out of. So at 12, what is it? In about
2:30?
Yeah, maybe I might give a couple more minutes. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay.
Well, just in case George doesn't stay with us, I may have mentioned this last time. I don't remember, but there's only been one way to end an argument in my family's household my entire life. If my brother and I were fighting over the remote or anything, and finally everybody calms down, there would be 3 seconds of silence, and someone would just say, "I'm just saying, if I was your accountant."
Oh,
and
everybody, really? Is that true?
That has been happening my entire life. So thank you for that.
Oh, no. God bless. Which I wish I had more time. I could tell you another story about something like that happened to me. Do you have 10 seconds?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I was in Chicago, and I was in a bar in Chicago, and I literally heard two guys doing a scene from the movie, The Litmus Configuration, and they were doing it wrong, and I was listening.
From Midnight Run.
Yeah, for Midnight Run. And I said, "Hey, guys, you're doing it wrong." And they're like, "Oh, what do you know?" And I said, "Not for nothing. I wrote the movie. I swear to God." I became their best friend. We, you know, we drank all night. So anyway,
that's great. Yeah.
I'll give a plug. Vanquish, available now on digital and on demand. And George, thanks for joining us, my friend.
I had a great time. And if you're speaking, you get all those motorcycles. Vanquish has a girl on a motorcycle for 90 minutes. So
perfect.
Watch. And Nate was a producer as well. And a cop who died. So watch for that. Thanks, George.
Up a lot of bikes. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I'll give some love to Caldera. Dry skin, acne scars, wrinkles, or just want healthier skin. Caldera. This is the product I use. The Good by Caldera Lab. Non-toxic natural serum made from 100% plants. Named by GQ as the best natural face serum for men. For all guys, all skin types, great for the beard, guys with the beard, and great for the guys with the bald, like Bald Brian over there. Good for the scalps, keeps it shiny and moisturized. Caldera Lab believes you shouldn't have to decide between clean and sustainable ingredients and real results. Simply apply to dry skin, and the rest is magic. Try it 100% risk-free. If you don't love it, then you can get a full refund. Caldera, right, Dawson?
Special offer for the Adam Carolla Show audience. 20% off your first Caldera Lab purchase of The Good. Go to calderalab.com/Adam. That's CalderaLab.com. Or use discount code Adam at checkout.
All right. So we got the news coming up with Gina Grad. We'll do that right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gina Grad. Stuff face on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Meet news with Gina. Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, I'm just sort of speed reading this headline that just broke saying, the officer who, Officer Sicknick, who, Brian Sicknick, who died during the Capitol riot, there is a headline right now saying that he died of natural causes, according to the chief medical examiner.
He was killed with a fire extinguisher, Gina.
Right. But also,
then he was killed with bear spray. That's
for sure. But here's the thing. Chief Medical Examiner Francisco Diaz ruled the death from natural causes rather than a homicide committed by another person. He found that Sicknick died from, quote, and we'll have to ask Drew about this, acute brainstem and cerebellar infarcts due to acute basilar artery thrombosis. Released. So this is the timeline.
What are you talking about?
I'm trying to figure that out. I'm literally reading this on the fly. He was sprayed at 2:20 and collapsed about 10 p.m., died 9:30 p.m. the next night.
Yeah. Oh.
And so this is all, I'm just kind of reading through this right now. So I'm sure there'll
be
more on that.
But did the spray do? Well, I don't know. I'm guessing.
That's the thing. Did it cause? I don't know.
Well, we're in this kind of weird gray zone, which is you go, bear spray, that's horrible. Right. But on the other hand, if bear spray killed you, then bear spray would be legal because lawn darts are. Because it's like if you sprayed it on
I'll guarantee that if Cousin Sal had bear spray in the Man Show office,
it would have been deployed
on every single person in the writer's room and receptionist and the guy who filled the vending machine.
Right.
So it must fuck bears up or annoy bears or, you know, get bears to walk the other direction, but it can't be lethal.
Well, and here's another headline. Officer Sicknick suffered strokes and died of natural causes. So we're going to find out how these things are related, if they are related. Or is it just the crazy, you know, just the a big coincidence?
Well, it's kind of interesting. The woman, we were talking about the deaths, the woman that was early on, so there were, let's see, there were five deaths, I think. Sicknick, and then there was two guys who died of like a, one woman that got shot, Sicknick, two guys have died of like heart attacks, and then one person who I always heard, you guys tell me, was trampled. At the beginning of the story, there was a woman who was trampled to death. She died of an OD.
Okay.
So she OD'd, two heart attacks, shot in the face or in the shoulder, the neck or something like that, and then Sicknick. But the trampled woman was not trampled. She died of an OD. I don't know how many drugs you got to do when you're going to a fucking rally, but
right,
is this the George Floyd argument where like you didn't die of the knee on your neck, you died of whatever's in your system? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I don't.
Obviously, all these things happen at once, and you can chalk it up to this or that depending on your point of view.
I think there's a couple things. If in fact you have two of your three or two out of whatever major arteries 90% clogged to your heart, or you're fixing to have a stroke at some point later in the year, and then you get bear sprayed in the face,
or
you get a knee on your neck, then you might, you know, actually, as I think about it, it's kind of like COVID.
It's like saying
you died of COVID. Yep. Yeah, but you're morbidly obese, and you have diabetes, and you weren't going to see the end of the year anyway. But COVID didn't help, you know?
Yeah.
So now the question is, you know, what did the bear spray do?
Yeah.
And also, I don't know, was there even bear spray? Because he was hit with a fire extinguisher at the beginning, right?
I guess I don't know.
I thought it was like a flagpole.
Yeah, I thought I saw a flagpole.
Is that another guy?
Someone else?
He was never hit with a fire extinguisher, but that was the news. The news that was reported was he was hit with a fire extinguisher.
Law enforcement officials initially said Officer Sicknick was struck in the head with a fire extinguisher, but medical experts have said he did not die from blunt force trauma. Instead, investigators increasingly believe Officer Sicknick may have been sprayed in the face with mace or bear spray, but now, like I just said, they're looking at a stroke and trying to see how
the way the news works is it could go from fire extinguisher to bear spray to stroke. Mm-hmm. That's the direction.
It's quite a
jump.
Then
the chick will go from trampled to OD.
Right.
It all goes from sort of big narrative to what they really died of.
Right.
But maybe the bear spray played in. Either way, it was a youngish guy.
42, I think.
Seems young for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, she died of intoxication of, I don't know what she...
Methamphetamine.
Yeah, the trampled one.
Yeah, that's
Roseanne
Boylan.
In the conspiracy theory, officer who shot chick, don't have his name.
Mm. Oh, really?
Not releasing his name. In a world where every cop that shoots somebody has their name released, not that guy.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. Well, it's not funny, but I sent a headline over earlier, and I did not read the whole article because I was getting some stuff together. But I did send an article, not knowing if you had seen it yet, and I'm just going to read you the headline. I believe it's from the New York Post. I just got to find what I labeled as whoopsie. Here we go. From New York Post, BLM protesters rally for victim, leave after learning he's white.
Oh, I also heard that Antifa and BLM were getting into it.
Oh.
Because there was
Venice Boardwalk?
There was something going on in Portland that was like white guy stuff, and I was a white guy was shot by the cops, and
everything in Portland is white guy stuff.
I know. And they didn't want BLM getting in on their turf.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Hatfields and McCoys
turning on each other.
Taking over.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to that point, the New York Post also reports that Minneapolis schools are canceling in-person classes in anticipation of the potentially volatile verdict at the murder trial of Derek Chauvin. So school officials said in-person classes will continue Monday and Tuesday, but will be suspended from Wednesday through Friday with students returning to in-home learning. The district also cautions parents about possible protests as a result of the Chauvin verdict, noting that some students may feel called to participate, quote. Now, here's the statement to the parents. It says, "We cannot deny the fact that people with ill intentions sometimes take advantage of communities in crisis. Please read more as you consider your decision to allow your student to participate in public gatherings and how it can impact your child, their education, and their safety."
I was watching some analysis of the final closing statements today, and they said that the prosecution was smart by removing race. They're just going, this guy's a bad cop.
Right. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what the victim was, yeah.
We think about all these things, and it's like race. There's still no proof that this was a race right. issue. Right. There's no proof that the female cop who shot the black kid was a race. We rush in with the race, but how does race factor in? And Mark Garriga sent me texts. It's like CNN doesn't want to know about the five cases I have of white people being shot by cops because it doesn't mean, because you don't assume, you just assume it's a bad cop shooting, a bad cop action, a bad cop, whatever. But I was watching Fox this morning and toggling between Fox and CNN. They were covering the closing remarks and they said it was smart of the prosecution to just leave race out of it. Sure. Just going, he was a bad cop. Wasn't and it wasn't that cops are bad, and it wasn't that he's racist. They were like, he's a bad cop,
yeah, mm-hmm.
which is much better angle to pursue.
Easier to prove, yeah, the cop acted improperly as opposed to prove this cop's a racist. How difficult right. would that be to prove in a court of law?
It's also weird to call someone a racist when they show up last at a crime scene, you know what I mean? Like the woman who shot the kid or Dante him, Ray. Like they show up late and go, what's going on here? And they go, oh, now I'm going to turn into a racist.
Oh,
like,
thank God.
Right.
Yeah, that's not usually how racists work. They show up first, you know.
And that's a great point. I mean, now you don't have to prove, like you said, now you don't have to prove half of society or disprove half of society. You're just saying this guy should not be a cop.
Yes.
This guy should be punished.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm looking at it right. CNN notification. Jurors are now deliberating in the trial after 45 witnesses were called over 3 weeks of testimony. So
all right.
Getting more alerts.
Keep you posted.
So speaking of this narrative, Sharon Osbourne did her first interview since leaving The Talk last month, and she did it with Bill Maher. She left over on that on-air disagreement with co-host Cheryl Underwood after Sharon defended her friend Piers Morgan over his criticism of Meghan Markle, and that did not go over well. I have three clips to our audio. So the first one, here's the first clip from the interview. Bill kind of sets the table for what happened and why Sharon's there.
Okay, yes. Then your friend Piers Morgan, he's mm-hmm. a commentator in Britain.
Yes.
He said he didn't believe things that Meghan Markle said.
Right.
And then on your show, you said, well, he's a good friend of mine, and I don't necessarily agree with his opinion, but he is entitled to his opinion.
Exactly.
So he was called a racist and lost his job, and you were called a racist and lost your job. Do I have it right?
You got it right. That's exactly how it went.
Right. Who's the racist and why? This is what I'm trying to figure out. Have you?
Me too.
Okay.
Me too. I've been called so many things in my life. I am so used to being called names, but a racist is one I will not take.
Yeah, it's an insult if you're not one.
So I have two
it's
other...
It's an insult if you are one.
Yeah, it's pretty insulting. So next, Sharon defends her stance from that episode of the show.
It's not fair. It's right. not fair because it isn't about being a racist. It's about maybe not knowing what is correct and woke for your language that day because it changes from day to day.
And finally, it's interesting talking about white privilege when we're talking about Prince Harry, not Sharon Osbourne. She makes an example of that, talking about race and privilege when you're talking about royalty.
It's you know when they say, like, white privilege? Right there with Harry. right there. He is the poster boy. So it's like, you know, he sits there and says, oh, daddy cut him off. So he's not on the wages anymore. And he was boo-hooing about it. You can't feel empathy for that because you're a healthy, bright, educated young man. You can go do whatever you want to do. Your life is your own.
What are you talking about?
Well,
some people understand it.
He gets it. Look, we're at a good time when we have to find racism now. That just means it doesn't exist in enough abundance to satisfy us. We got to go digging for it and manufacturing it. I don't even know what this story is. I know I sound like a crazy person, but this story or Chris Harrison or whatever, if somebody would have come to me, like if I was sitting in the racism bureau where we just become victims and then we have to find racism everywhere and you showed me the story, I'd go, there's nothing here. I would feel like a lawyer where somebody came in and said, like, I slipped in my own tub because I was drunk. I'd go, I don't know who to sue. I want to sue myself. I'd be like, I don't feel like there's anything here.
Right. Any meat on that bone?
Go find someone who was discriminated against in a handicapped stall at a popular restaurant and come back. You know?
Well, I spared you this. I didn't pull any clips from it, but I did watch a clip from the first day back when we told you Cheryl Underwood said, this is going to be a day of no holds barred discussion. Okay.
Let me guess, there were holds barred?
So there was a gentleman, I don't know who it was, a black gentleman who was kind of interviewing them that day about what had happened. And there's just a lot of talk about, like, you know, you're very brave and thank you for holding back. And it was just, I only saw a clip, but not a lot of questions about Sharon, just a lot of congratulating each other for, you know, for doing what they had to do, I guess.
Well, we're living in a time where we're sort of out of real problems, but we're wired for problems. So if you take the average hardworking, let's just say you take the average hardworking woman, mother, making ends meet, has to work, budget, blah, blah, blah. That's an interesting experiment. Mm. This is the way we're, because we're wired for problems and pushing against things that are coming at us. And now we're living in this kind of zero gravity environment where we really don't have obstacles or predators in the nature.
Adversity.
And so we're creating things. I would bet if you interviewed your average Guatemalan woman of three with the husband who drove the forklift all day and she worked all day at the supermarket or something and then had to come back and do all the cooking for everyone. And everything was tough. They had one car between the two of them and insurance and gas and everything was expensive and the kids want to go to Disneyland, but they can't afford it. If you interviewed that woman and just said, like, tell me what's going on. Are you happy? What are your problems? What's difficult? What's easy? What's whatever? And then you went and found your average chick from Beverly Hills who didn't have a day job and was being kept. The woman from Beverly Hills would speak endlessly about the problems she's having.
Right?
The guy fucked up the topiary in the front. Yeah, I was supposed to have my girlfriend's, my initials, and she fucked up
my day.
Right.
On top of that, a lot of those crises are invisible or existential.
Right.
You know what I mean? COVID, cyber crimes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Cyberbullying. All this stuff is stuff you can't see. It's not a problem in your purview.
So it's interesting as real racism wanes. Cries of racism go up as real victims. Just think about just the umbrella victimhood. Who were willing? What I knew as a victim growing up. If you were a victim, you had burn marks on you. Like you were a victim of something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Everyone willing to label themselves a victim or repressed or held back or whatever that is, versus now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sociological thing that's going on, which is we need a windmill to tilt against, and this is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's racism is perfect because nobody pipes up and goes, "Oh, come on, keep walking. It's not a real issue." Like it shuts everyone up immediately. So you just bring it up.
Almost everyone
zips it. Everyone but me. And the news outlets just run with it, and it's the perfect storm.
You're right. This isn't about racism necessarily, but about Americans. And of course, this line popped into my head, a very memorable line from The Sopranos where the Russian housekeeper is talking to Tony. And she says, "That's the trouble with you Americans. You expect nothing bad to ever happen, while the rest of the world expects only bad to happen. And they're not disappointed." So they're very hardy, and we're not.
Yeah, it's also when you have real problems, they occupy you. Like when you go, "We need clean water." Like, someone better walk to that fucking well.
No, that's your day.
Like, it's your day, or we have to get over the valley, through the valley, and over the hill to, you know, get, or someone's got to harvest that wheat. Like, these are like occupying, sitting around looking at your phone all day and wondering about the invisible problems that are our culture.
Technically, I don't want to shit on your point, but I too have to get through the valley if I want dinner.
That's true.
I know the struggle better than you two. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says it launched another investigation into Tesla following a fatal crash in Spring, Texas over the weekend. So here's what happened. NBC reports two men died in the crash Saturday night, one guy in the front seat but not behind the wheel, and the other guy in the passenger seat, the rear seat.
The driverless car?
Yeah, well, that's the question.
Or autopilot or whatever.
The electric vehicle was a Tesla 2019 Model S. It crashed into a tree, burst into flames, killed both of them. A preliminary report is not conclusive, and questions remain about whether Tesla's advanced driver assistance system was engaged. Its autopilot and full self-driving technology do not make Tesla vehicles safe for operation without a driver at the wheel, apparently. The company says in its owner's manual that drivers must use autopilot only with active supervision. So was this let's you know, go out drinking or take a nap and see what happens? We don't know yet.
I don't know. If I were drunk, I'd chance it. But we're not quite there, but I think we're getting there. But it's funny. Volvo's interesting. I was talking to someone who was looking at getting a car, and she was like, "Well, Volvo's the safest." And I was like, "I don't know. Maybe that could be a relic from like 1987. Right. Like, they're all super safe now. I don't even... No, Max Zapata, what is the safest car? Because it was like Volvo was the safest, and that was their reputation until like the mid-90s, and then everyone just moved on, and everything was safe. Yes, Brian.
Flip side of that question is, are there any unsafe cars on the road?
No.
They all have to be a certain rating just to be sold in America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but some
I guess maybe a Jeep might be a little less safe because of the doors.
Some are going to exceed whatever the federal... CAFE or DOT, Department of Transportation, or whatever that is. But I wonder, and they don't sell safe anymore because everything is presumed safe. But I wonder if there is still a car that is the safest make, which is interesting. All right.
Isn't it always between Toyota, Honda, and Subaru?
Toyota, Honda are always the most reliable. I don't know if there was the safest. But
I just know those are always the three that are at the top of the list. Hmm. You know, I mean, that's also in terms of resale and stuff. So I just assumed it would be overall.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe it is.
Well, let's get local again here. Demi Lovato has put an LA-based frozen yogurt shop on blast for carrying sugar-free options, saying it was triggering for her as a woman recovering from an eating disorder.
Is it the Big Chill?
It is.
It is it. That's why. That's my yogurt
shop. Place?
That's where I did the reveal for Tessa.
Hold on. It's not Humphrey Yogurt?
It's not Humphrey Yogurt.
Is it really the Big Chill?
Yes, it is.
Wow, that's funny. The place is always packed.
Well, she said on Instagram story, which is why it's no longer available, "Finding it extremely hard to order Froyo from the Big Chill when you have to walk past tons."
It can be Well, no greater example of what I was talking about 4 minutes ago, right?
Problem.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
"When you have to walk past tons of sugar-free cookies / other diet foods before you get to the counter, do better, please.
What?
# diet culture vultures." Now, the Big Chill has responded.
To be fair, I've waited in that line many times, and they have racks of cookies just waiting so you get to the front.
This is their response. "We carry items for diabetics, celiac disease, vegan, and of course many indulgent items as well. We are not diet vultures. We cater to all of our customer needs for the past 36 years. We're sorry you found this offensive."
In their defense, their stuff seems all very homemade. You know what I mean? It's like Annie's cookies or whatever, and it's clearly like one of the stickers been slapped on.
But
so,
seeing sugar-free options is triggering.
But then don't go in.
But
well, now you're just acting crazy.
Does she want the sugar-free stuff?
No, I think it's she's battled so much with doing without and starving and, you know, whatever her, you know, particularly brand of eating disorder is, that seeing something that caters to like sugar-free, fat-free is perpetuating a diet culture.
It's an interesting time for people like that, and
I mean,
anyone.
Alcoholics have to walk down the aisle of the grocery store.
That's part of being in recovery, is getting to do your daily business.
Re-entering society.
Exactly.
It's interesting that everyone's going to have to do battle with whatever they're doing battle with, mm-hmm. because it's for the taking everywhere all the time. And in a weird way, the more, you know, the more money you have, and if you have a capacity to gain weight, that she'll just be your world. Like she's
indeed,
she must get up thinking about food, go to bed thinking about food.
I feel her.
One of the best gifts you could probably, all right, here's something. Right. You know, I always talk about like the worst thing that can happen is the super horny guy. Like how it just destroys your career.
Oh, being the horny guy. Yeah,
you're like a guy. It's like you can't just be married and bang the same chick over and over again. You have this thing, or having the weird perverse, you know, sort of Harvey Weinstein thing, or Armie Hammer kind of thing. But it's just like it's in your head.
Yeah.
You have to act on it. And then there are other guys just like, well, I'm happy with the same woman, or I'll just go beat off and go to bed, or whatever that is. The best gift you could probably give to a woman is just like no thoughts about food. It pertains to like 3% of them. you do run into people. It is like, I don't really care. I don't think about it.
Very upsetting.
I do too. I hate those people. But they're just like, they're not that into it.
Yeah. It's like, they exist.
It's just, it's not their food. It's not their thing.
It's fuel. It's not really for pleasure. It's just kind of whatever.
Yes. Yeah. Imagine the freedom of just not caring.
I can't.
You know what I mean? Like,
I can't wrap my head around that.
You guys, like me, like you start thinking about meals 3 days in advance.
Sure
like, we're going to try that sushi place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the flip side of the other edge of that sword is that you can't enjoy like a meal out or someone made a meal for Thanksgiving or whatever. He's like,
I don't really like Thanksgiving food.
Right.
Yeah.
We have the safest cars, according to Chris.
Oh, yeah, so these are all based off of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, the IIHS safety test and the crash test that they do. Coming in fifth is Subaru.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Tied for fourth is Mercedes-Benz and Mazda.
Interesting.
Next is Tesla.
It's interesting. So
every car company is going to make
Tesla, as long as you're driving it.
Mazda's over the moon and Mercedes is pissed, right? That's how life works.
Yeah, but you were right. Like almost every car brand received very high scores anyway. Volvo is number two, and first is Genesis.
Oh, really?
Tiger Woods ruined that shit.
He lived.
No, that's a good point, actually.
I was talking to Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, who has a guy who's on the inside of all these things, and he said that he assured everyone that on a car like Tiger Woods' Genesis, that Genesis, the company, insured that car. Mm-hmm. They have a different car insurance for liability, like if Tiger ran over somebody, mm-hmm. but not if something happens to the car. That's their car, and that's their insurance, and it's already been crushed.
Wow.
They own the car. That's how it works. But with Genesis being number one and Tiger surviving that, why not tour it around?
Why not?
There's corporate decisions that are made that are kind of vexing, and like I said, a rich history of car companies crushing cars they probably should have never crushed or wish they had 20 years later, and this will probably be one of those cars.
It's fascinating.
It's a way to...
I don't know if it was like just in case somebody comes sniffing around. I mean, like, what are you trying to get rid of?
They download...
the Patriots and their tapes of other teams.
Right.
They download the contents of the black box.
Right.
They know everything they need to know, and then they photograph the shit out of it, probably, and then they crush it. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Great! Gina
Grad! That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, do you own, do you rent your home? Sure you do, one or the other. And how about we get back to the aforementioned insurance? How about you bundle with God?
Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save. Geico makes it so easy to save when you bundle at Geico. That is geico.com. All right, Chuck Liddell, the Iceman, cometh tomorrow.
Wow.
So we got Chuck to talk to. Enjoy your 818 rye. That was really
delicious.
Good.
Great.
Good. Great. Vanquish, name of the movie, available now in digital and on demand. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Mike August and Gina Grad and Paul Bryan and George Gallo saying mahalo.
I don't know what to do to hurt the people. I love the people.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Catch Gina Grad on the podcast Easy Listening. And Paul Bryan on the podcast The Film Vault. Catch the rest of us on the show called The Water Cooler. And then leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And get tickets to see Adam Carolla live or one of his books, movies, and more at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.